we present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
We start with a cutting from the BBC Suffolk website, read by Vaughan Savage.
St Jude's Brewery is to reopen its pub in Matthews Street on 27th September due to popular demand. The company was declared insolvent in May as it had run out of liquid assets.
And our thanks to Andrew Kleissner for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Francis Ween and Susan Kalman. Opposite them on my left, Cal Wilson and Jeremy Hardy. Francis, who's saying balls to a pay freeze?
Well, it's this wonderful, never-ending summer of spectacle that's brought us all together. The Olympics, then the Paralympics, and now the Trades Union Congress. Claire Balding wasn't on it, but apart from that, it was very much in the spirit of the thing. You could press the red button to get synchronised striking. And actually, if they do call a general strike, it'll be the first one since 1926, when Fred Perry did it, so that'll be... worth another victory parade. And apart from the synchronised heckling of Ed Balls, without which no event is complete these days, it was all Olympics. Brendan Barber, the outgoing General Secretary, gave a speech saying we've got to learn the lessons of the Olympics and the government should concentrate and have an Olympic-style crusade, focusing on the things that we're best at as a nation. And actually, the lesson of the Olympics and Paralympics is the things we're best at as a nation are dressage and booing George Osborne. So we can expect a lot more of that.
The sad thing is, politically, the lesson of the Olympics is the private sector is not only greedy but incompetent, but never mind, because the army can always take over in a crisis. So never mind, if privatising everything doesn't work, we can have a coup.
There's been talk of military cover for striking workers, and do you not love the idea of a dinner lady who's in the Marines?
See, that's the thing. It can only work if everyone comes out. Like librarians replaced by soldiers. Instead of, shh, it'd be, line of door, shut up! Don't we have rights in him! Quiet! It's a library!
What I liked was there was a woman called Dot from the National Pensioners Convention.
Oh, yes.
Did you see her? Who said that they were going to join in and do their bit with the general strike. And she said, we're going to go into town halls and sit down and refuse to budge. And they'll be sitting there saying, now, what did I come in here for?
I do like the idea, though, of pensioners protesting, because it would be wonderful kind of protest cries. It would be, what do we want? What?
I do think the tendency to boo is quite an interesting development. After Osborne was booed, now at the TUC, everyone's kind of gone, oh, this is a marvellous way of doing things. Boo!
Except, actually, when you see Boris Johnson, you have to cheer, because even if you don't like Boris Johnson, if he's standing alongside David Cameron and everyone cheers Boris Johnson, it gets Cameron so angry that it is the equivalent of booing him.
Is he somebody that's actually known in Australia? Does anybody know who Boris Johnson is?
I think so. We know him as the guy with the hair that looks like he's been spending a lot of time rubbing it with a balloon to get the static. And he spends a lot of time dangling on a zip wire.
I think you've got his whole career in a nutshell there. But Ed Balls, I think he thought he was being heckled, but actually they were just chanting his surname in support, I think.
I quite like his name. It sounds like someone who's tried to give himself the most masculine name you can think of, Ed Balls. Like, he's going to be an action hero. And, like, Vince Cable as well sounds kind of Vince Cable.
Yeah.
Like, they obviously don't suit their names, but it sounds like they've given it a good crack.
Yeah. RMT's Bob Crow. I love this. This is a beautiful piece of poetry by one of the trade union leaders. Spit on your own and you can't do anything, but if you all spit together, you can drown the bastards. Do you not have a sense of the anniversary cards he writes for his wife? Very impressive. This week, Shadow Chancellor Ed Balls was heckled at the Trade Union Congress, whose members voted overwhelmingly to start looking into the practicalities of the first general strike in Britain since 1926. Hearing the news about the possible strike, Cabinet Minister Francis Maude recommended that the public store paramedics and nurses in a jerry can, just in case. By rejecting the union's position, Ed Miliband has been accused of biting the hand that feeds him, which, coincidentally, is what got him and David separated at play school. To points to Francis. Jeremy, who is one step closer to justice now they finally know the truth?
Well, this is a serious one. It's the subject that has dominated the news, apart from The Telegraph, on which it was page six, when they said, Northerners' complaints partially recognised. But, yeah, Hillsborough, which is very good news for the Hillsborough Justice Campaign and the family support group. It's a positive result that the bravery and stoicism and dignity of those families has now paid off, and hopefully now that the truth is out, they'll start to get justice.
Since the disaster, the Sun newspaper has largely been boycotted in Liverpool, not just because of that headline, but because I think everybody in Liverpool has got better taste. The Sun apologised previously in 2004, calling the false reports the most terrible mistake in our history. And if you just remind you, this is the Sun we're talking about, so the competition is fierce, I think.
It was all on the telly. That's the bizarre thing. The Sun ran this story, which was lies fed to them indirectly from South Yorkshire Police, and saying that people had urinated on the police and stolen from dead bodies, and yet the whole thing was on telly, you know, which would be like after the Olympics, somebody saying Al-Qaeda were in the crowd and Claire Balding's head was cut off and put on a stick, and the Sun puts that on the front page as being true, and no one questions it for 23 years.
An independent report into the Hillsborough disaster has confirmed that South Yorkshire Police tried to cover up their own failings by altering statements to shift the blame onto Liverpool fans. The Hillsborough independent panel have proved what most people knew all along. The police were corrupt, the fans weren't to blame, and when the Sun claims to be printing the truth, it's probably not. One of the sources of the Sun story was revealed to be the then MP for Sheffield, Sir Irvin Patnick. Unless you're listening to the repeat of the show when it's just plain Irvin Patnick. In his career as an MP, Irvin Patnick opposed sanctions on apartheid South Africa, supported Section 28, and voted to reintroduce the death penalty. He left politics in 1997 to spend more time with his conscience. 2 points to Jeremy. Susan, who doesn't think Wales should make the grade?
Yes, this is Michael Gove. This is in relation to the English and the Welsh examination system, which, just for the purposes of clarity, Scotland has a different exam system. We compete for sporrans in Highland Games. I myself got two tossing the cabers in maths. And the GCSEs, what happened was that in January some people sat it and passed it, and then they changed the grading system so that when people sat it in just before the summer, a lot of people were getting worse marks. So in between times, you were a success, then you were a failure. Much like Britain's performance in the Eurovision Song Contest in the 60s and in the 90s. And Michael Gove has said he doesn't believe there should be any political interference. Mm. And he also said he's not taking any responsibility for the furore because it was the previous government that did it. At what point are they going to stop saying, but it was them, not me? You're the education minister. Perhaps you should sort it out, mate.
So did Labour briefly come back into power between the January exams and the June?
So you're going to have to help me out here because I'm not really familiar with the whole GCSE thing and I'm a bit confused by
it's
all...
It's a bit like the Welsh.
New Zealand's kind of like the Wales of Australia, I think, okay. So maybe I'm in good company. But Ofqual... Yeah. That, to me, sounds like something you'd give to a child with a fever. But it's some kind of examining board, and then you've got all the other examining boards, so you've got EdXL, AQA, OCR, OCD, ACDC, and YMCA.
But Gove is clearly interfering because he's clearly wanting people to get marked out because he thinks too many people are doing well in education. And because rather than think it's about trying to get everybody up to a certain standard, if somebody passing is to have any validity in his mind, somebody has to fail, which is not the way we look at everything. I mean, if we reach the dream scenario where we have 100% adult literacy in this country, in Gove's mind, that would mean that standards of literacy had actually slipped. So people would have to take their reading test again, and they'd have to read Ulysses from start to finish in the dark.
But Gove, I think Gove and Ofqual, they say that it's not so much that the summer grades were too low, it's just that the ones in January were too high.
Oh.
Which I think may be true, because actually my youngest son took his English GCSE in January and he got a B, which is astounding, because the only sentence he's capable of writing in exams is totes, amazeballs, lol. I think that's all he did, he got a B for it.
They should just have an amnesty, because it's just a bit of paper, like in The Wizard of Oz, isn't it? It's just a bit of paper, but there's so many things, like if you haven't got your maths, there's countries you can't go to and things like that. They should have an amnesty where we all just get degrees. For example, you can get given an honorary degree, can't you?
I've got
on the basis
of
nothing. Exactly. It just means nothing. So why
what
not?
What do you mean?
Well, you're probably a rector of somewhere. You don't know what a rector is, do you? Just say, who's a bit famous off the telly who's bored enough to be a rector of our university? Sandy Toksvig, let's get her. And you go along. And you say, oh, yes, I'm the rector. What are my special powers? Do I get to carry a firearm? No, I'm sorry, it's purely nominal. And but you know...
I'll have you know I'm the Chancellor of Portsmouth University.
Chancellor means you run it in German.
I do.
What does that mean?
Yeah, I get people to call me Angela. That's my first rule.
Angular is not a word I would use to describe myself. No disrespect, but I think we're looking at rhomboid, I think.
I'm also.
She's the Chancellor. She can have me killed.
I am the Chancellor of this university. Your powers mean nothing to me. You poor fool, you are powerless faced with the Chancellor.
Sorry, I'm just going to regrade the school. Education Secretary Michael Gove has attacked his Welsh counterpart for ordering disputed GCSEs to be regraded. Gove told MPs that raising Welsh pupils' grades would undermine future employers' confidence in the value of their qualifications. I love this. How naive. Thinking that there'll be employers in the future. 2 points to Susan. Cal, whose early draft has begotten a row?
This would be referring to Nick Clegg. Yes. So please forgive me if I'm not completely up to speed with the news, because I do live in Australia. So
no, listen, Nick Clegg's not completely up to speed. I wouldn't worry.
We're just up to the part where Charles has married Camilla.
That's right.
And I'm really excited to be here just in time for the Olympics. So this is about Nick Clegg,
yes.
Who I don't know whether I'm allowed to do this, but I feel a bit sorry for him. Aww. Because people don't seem to like him. And every time I hear his name, I think of that Rolf Harris song, you know, that goes, I'm Jake the Pig, dee lee 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 with my extra Clegg, dee lee lee. So his office had put out a speech this week. They put out a draft copy, and it was for Nick Clegg to speak at a marriage equality reception, and it used the term bigot to refer to people who opposed gay marriage. Caused a little bit of a fuss. So Nick Clegg's office came out and said, no, we didn't mean bigot, we meant some people. So they replaced it with some people. Clegg said it wasn't even the sort of word that he'd use. He said maybe he would have used it before he was Deputy Prime Minister, but now he doesn't really say anything at all. Religious people got offended by the use of the word bigot, so he wrote to the Archbishops of Canterbury and Westminster and assured them that the speech didn't reflect his views on them. He went, no, I didn't mean you guys, I meant those other bigots. And he said it didn't reflect his views, it wasn't written by him, his office had come up with it. But if it didn't reflect his views, he didn't think that. Is his office just randomly taking speeches off the internet?
Are you saying that Nick Clegg doesn't write his own speeches? This is shocking. This is like finding out that Milli Vanilli wasn't really singing.
He didn't write it because one of his advisors said to the papers that it was a back office bungle.
Oh.
Quite painful.
Yes.
Wasn't he on Rainbow, back office?
That was the late night version.
But why doesn't Clegg just say what he thinks? Because that was a great thing about Liberals. They never really thought they would get anywhere. So they used to say what they believed, some of which was perfectly endearing, sensible stuff. And then they get power and they get all nervous and start saying, oh, no, we didn't mean any of that. And now he's finished. Why doesn't he just come out and say, yeah, you are bigots. You're just bigots. Get used to read my lips. Bigots. Bigots. That's what you are. Because how else can you describe it? Mm. A person suffering from tolerance deficit disorder. Bigots always say, well, if men and men and women are allowed to get married, what next? Will people be able to marry animals? And you think, well, you never draw the parallel between humans and animals in any other circumstance. If you say, well, I'm going out for a drink with Brian, so oh, well, if you're going out for a drink with Brian, why don't you go out for a drink with a rhinoceros then?
My favourite ever Norman Tebbit remark, when civil partnerships came in, he said, I can't be the only person who has noticed that since the introduction of civil partnerships, there's been a tremendous rise in violent crime. It's all those gay people saying, I'm not having floral curtains, I'm not. Nick Clegg has become embroiled in a row over gay marriage after advisers had to remove comments in the draft version of a speech calling opponents bigots. Nick Clegg wrote to religious leaders to apologise, but by mistake addressed one of the letters to the arch-bigot of Canterbury. At the end of round one, the scores are Francis and Susan have got 4 points, but so too have Cal and Jeremy. We start round two with a sign spotted on the door of the upper toilet facilities at the Glenmore campsite.
Facilities closed for cleaning between 1:45 p.m. and 4 p.m. Please use bottom block.
Our thanks to Chris Whitby for sending us that. Francis, who followed a hunch and found a king-sized discovery?
Oh, this is King Richard III.
Yes.
They think they've found him in a car park in Leicester. Or his skeleton. They may have got it wrong. I mean, I think it's more likely to be someone who went back, couldn't find where he parked his car, and after about 2 hours, just lost the will to live and lay down and died, which we've all been through. But they think it's him because the skeleton has got a crooked back. And the one thing everyone knows about Richard III is that he was a hunchback with a withered arm, except it's not true. There's no contemporary evidence whatsoever that he was like that, nor that he killed the princess in the tower, nor that he murdered his wife. It's all made up by Shakespeare. Because Shakespeare made him out to be this kind of Plantagenet Phil Mitchell character, this really evil thug. Well, he wasn't. In fact, when he died, if only Tony Blair had been around, he could have said, truly, he was the people's Plantagenet.
Shakespeare always makes me feel bad, though, because I always feel like an underachiever. Do you know what I realised the other day? That when Shakespeare was my age, he'd been dead for 2 years.
I think you shouldn't discount Shakespeare's contribution because he was found in a car park, right? And in the first quarto of Richard III, it actually reads, a Volkswagen Passat, my kingdom for a Volkswagen Passat.
The Telegraph had just the best coverage. According to the Telegraph, the skeleton had near-death trauma. Does that make it sound like he nearly died and then pulled through at the last minute?
I like the Times headline. When I read it this morning, it just had, the king in the car park. And I was like, oh, no, what's Harry done now?
They're testing a gentleman called Ibsen or something like
yes,
that, aren't they?
His direct descendant.
Direct descendant of Richard III. And I quite like that idea that we could all get DNA tested to see whether or not we're related to the royal family, a royal family, whichever one. I don't care which one takes me. I don't really mind.
Presumably, if it's found that he is related to Richard III, he'll be liable for, I would have thought, about 500 years of pay and display parking fines.
I can do the thing.
What's that?
Now is the winter of our discontent made glorious summer by this sun of York, and all the clouds that lower upon our house in the deep bosom of the ocean buried. Now are our brows bound with victorious wreaths, our bruised arms hung up for monuments, our stern alarums changed to merry meetings, our dreadful marches to delightful measures. Grim-visaged war hath smoothed his wrinkled front, and now instead of mounting barbed steeds to fright the souls of fearful adversaries, he capers nimbly in a lady's chamber to this livious pleasing of a lute. Exterminate, exterminate.
More than 500 years since he was killed in battle, archaeologists believe they have found the skeleton of King Richard III underneath a council car park in Leicester. Richard's death concluded the Wars of the Roses, which was the bloodiest internal conflict since the Battle of Quality Street and the Milk Tray Massacre. The skeleton displays trauma to the skull and has severe spinal curvature. Athos have judged him fit for work and his benefits have been stopped. 2 points to Francis. Susan, who has slammed his critics and finally served up a British success?
Andy Murray.
Was one.
Andy Murray won the New York tennis open thing. And as usual, people talk about Andy Murray not being the explosive ball of charisma. But I like that. He just plays tennis, quite frankly. I don't think I want to see a chuckle brother against Roger Federer. I don't understand a British obsession for everyone being entertaining. He's a tennis player. Let him play tennis. That's the problem with politicians. We've all got round to this kind of grand way of choosing politicians. Oh, he's got a nice smile, hasn't he? He's got a hanky. It's like, I don't understand what the problem is. Scottish people generally don't get overexcited about things because we're always expecting the worst. So he won New York and he's probably thinking, oh, I'll probably lose my luggage on the way home. That's what. We're natural pessimists, and that's
why. You're naturally
why...
glass half empty people, aren't you? Especially if it's a glass of Buckfast Abbey tonic. Yeah.
Do you think his mum will calm down a bit now?
Judy.
I don't want to accuse her of vicariously wallowing in her son's achievements, but I am accusing her of that. She's a bit too frantic. I mean, I would love it if he turned around and said, right, mum, I've won that, and now I want to pursue my real dream, which is contemporary dance.
And just see the look on her.
You gave me the mental picture of her giving birth to him like one of those automatic tennis ball launches.
Catch this, midwife!
The good thing was that Andy gave himself a talking to just before the fifth set. So he was two sets up and he lost two sets and he went for a bathroom break. He said he gave himself a good talking to in the toilet. Now, I've done that. I've done it when I've had too much to drink. You go in and you kind of go, oh, Susan, I think you're drunk. What are you going to do about it? And you go, I'll just go out really casual. And I won't have any more to drink, apart from this vodka I've got in the cubicle. So I like to think I'm very like Andy Murray in that way. We both use positive mental attitude in our everyday life.
Sean Connery was there. He called the result a victory for his country. I had no idea Andy Murray was so well supported in the Bahamas, so that was good.
Did you see him go into meltdown about his watch, though? He forgot to wear the watch that he is paid to watch by the people that make the watch. You know, like all athletes have to be sponsored now. And he didn't have it on, and the pictures were about to be taken, and he was in a meltdown because his sponsorship deal would be cancelled because it would be revealed that he only wears it for cynical financial reasons. Oh. He knows damn well what the time is.
I don't see the problem myself with that kind of sponsorship. As I said, from the comfort of my Mothercare booster seat. Andy Murray has become the first British male to win a tennis Grand Slam in 76 years after defeating Novak Djokovic at the US Open. Murray had been British number one for a long time now. It's not exactly difficult, is it? It's like being tallest news quiz panellist.
Can you get cream for Djokovic? You can, quite.
It's right next to the bottom block, I think.
This is the first Grand Slam victory for a British male since 1936, after which point all tennis players were melted down to make tanks for World War II. The Daily Mail described Andy's long-term girlfriend, Kim, as having an uncomplaining nature, making her the perfect tennis wife. Suddenly, 1936 doesn't seem so long ago. 2 points to Susan. Cal, who's eyeing up your house just for a nose?
Well, apparently 1 in 5 people admit to going and looking at houses for sale without any intention of buying them. Most of those people are actually burglars. And the other percentage of people that go without intention to buy is just Kirsty Allsop.
That's fair enough, isn't it? I mean, it's just browsing, isn't it? You should be able to ring on someone's doorbell and they open the door and they say, can I help you? You say, no, just looking, thank you. People go to funerals, don't they?
Anyone yeah, can, really? Can go to,
yeah, older people, because they want to check it out, because, you know, they're thinking of dying as well. You can go to court cases, can't you? You can sit in the public gallery. So you should really be able to go and look. If someone's put their house on the market, then they're asking for it, I say.
But it's a natural curiosity, because people can pretend to be entirely different. So, you know, I've got an image of all of you because I've met you, but your house is what reveals what you're truly like. And, I mean, I think it's fascinating. I love walking down the street, and if people don't close their curtains, especially, you know, they put on the lights, and you can just wander around looking in people's houses. But no, everyone else does that. I am not the only person.
Sometimes you have to look after a neighbour's cat, don't you? You've got keys and you go into their house and they're not there and you think, well, I fed the cat. got time on my hands. Would it be so wrong? Would it be so wrong to walk around in my neighbour's underwear for an hour?
A poll has found that one in five Britons arranges viewings of houses they don't intend buying just so they can have a look around. The poll of 2,000 people was taken on behalf of the television channel Home. Wow. They found 2,000 people who've heard of the television channel Home. Before I reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings. The teams have brought along Mr. Ween.
This is from Michael Bernard. It's from Daunce's School, a letter sent out to parents, saying, "Dear parent, you are cordially invited to the Daunce's Rifle Club Parents' Evening next Tuesday. The evening will consist of an opportunity to see your child participating in a friendly competition, to meet our coach, Sandra Bull, and to have a go at shooting yourself."
Ms. Kalman.
This is from Perry Wheeler, and it's a South Australian police press release. It says, "Police are puzzled as to the reason behind the theft of 42 kilograms of mayonnaise from a business premises. Police are asking anyone with information on the theft or hearing of people making large quantities of coleslaw or potato salad to please contact the police."
Wilson.
I actually keep these in my wallet. I've had these in my wallet for a while. They're from a Tasmanian newspaper. There's two of them. 2 days in a row, they had an article entitled Oven Fire. And the first one is, "Fire crews were called to a home in View Road yesterday after a dirty oven caught fire momentarily. The fire was out quickly with little damage." The next day, oven fire. "Fire crews attended an oven fire at Saundridge Road. The fire was out on arrival."
Mr. Hardy.
This, it was sent in by someone called Jackie. It says, "I read in a sign in a Gloucestershire hospital waiting room this morning dealing with various issues of life with a plaster cast. Under the section about going to the loo, it stated, 'If you find sitting on the toilet uncomfortable, you may find it easier to rest your leg cast on a stool.'"
Score. Francis and Susan have got 12 points, but in a regrading done by the Welsh Examining Board, Cal and Jeremy are this week's winners with 13. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the I newspaper sent in by Andrew Jefford.
"Senior Taliban commanders have reacted with glee at having the opportunity to target Prince Harry when he is deployed in Afghanistan. Mullah Burjan said he will aim to shoot down Apache gunships and would love to hit his chopper."
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Ween, Susan Kalman, Carol Wilson and Jeremy Hardy. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Vaughan Savage. The chair's script was written by Roderick Crooks, John Hunter and Benjamin Partridge, with additional material by Matthew Oakley and Jack Bernard. The producer was Lindsay Fenner.